You're listening to Consider This, episode 13, for September 12, 2012.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever, wherever, and whoever you are, your luck is changing. You've tuned into lucky episode 13 of Consider This, the podcast where I, your lucky host, Doug Payton, give you a short 10-minute or less piece of my mind on politics and culture. And I'd love to have a nugget from you as well. You can find all sorts of ways to get in touch over at the website considerthis.ctpodcasting.com. That's CT, as in Cowardly Tarantula. Now that would have been an interesting character in The Wizard of Oz. I'm going to be discussing the issues of abortion and pedophilia this time. I'm announcing this up front, so you know what to expect before you decide to play this episode within earshot of the youngsters. I'm keeping my PG rating, nothing to worry about there, but it'll be, shall we say, a little more PG than usual. Anyway, fair warning. Did you know that you can listen to Consider This on your smartphone? Whether it's an iPhone or an iPod Touch, or an Android or a WebOS device, whatever that is, the Stitcher app is available for it. If you go to my website and click on the Stitcher logo, you'll be directed to a page where you can get a download link for the phone of your choice. Put Consider This with no spaces into the promo code. That will let them know where you heard about it. From either the app or their website, you can choose from over 10,000 audio programs on all sorts of topics. You can stream them to your device, or they just added the ability to have new episodes download to your device so you can play them when you're out of Wi-Fi range. And if you have one of those cool new Ford, GM, or BMW cars, you can actually play them there just as easily as picking a radio station. Except you customize the programming. Just another way to enjoy the show. And with that, stand back. Here comes that show. Rape, incest, or the life of the mother. These are typically the three reasons under which almost everyone would say that an abortion should be permissible. Well, an international symposium on maternal health care in Dublin, Ireland last weekend may reduce that number. About 140 medical professionals were at the event, including experts in obstetrics and gynecology, mental health, and molecular biology. They presented new research on issues surrounding maternal health care, with a focus on high-risk pregnancies, cancer in pregnancy, fetal anomalies, mental health, and maternal mortality. Professor O'Dwyer and a panel of speakers also formally agreed a Dublin Declaration on Maternal Health Care. It stated, quote, "As experienced practitioners and researchers in obstetrics and gynecology, we affirm that direct abortion is not medically necessary to save the life of a woman. We uphold that there is a fundamental difference between abortion and necessary medical treatments that are carried out to save the life of the mother, even if such treatments result in the loss of life of her unborn child." So there is that one caveat in the statement. In the course of other medical treatments required to save the mother's life, if the baby dies, that could happen. That's understandable. And in a separate statement, the chairman of the group sponsoring the symposium stated it another way. No treatment should ever be withheld from a woman if it's needed to save her life, even if that treatment resulted in the loss of life of her unborn child. But the symposium did say that abortion, by itself, is never medically necessary to save her. Never. That's a pretty strong word coming from experts in their fields. But that's what they said. And now the question is, will that have an effect on the abortion debate in this country? It ought to. This is a huge statement from people in the field who would know. But I haven't heard it covered much in this country, which is a big reason why I'm covering it here for whoever will listen. It ought to change the debate in some way. I hope it will. In the last episode of Consider This, I discussed how polygamy is beginning to get mainstreamed, with major newspapers asking the question, why is 2 some magic number for marriage? Why not 3 or 4 or 17? The website Gawker is now giving press, and rather disturbing press, frankly, the beginning of the article is not for the squeamish, to guys like Dr. Hubert van Heijsenhem, who is retired from the University of Montreal and who testified before the Canadian Parliament's Committee on Justice and Human Rights. In part, he said, "It is a fact that real pedophiles account for only 20% of sexual abusers. If we know that pedophiles are not simply people who commit a small offense from time to time, but rather are grappling with what is equivalent to a sexual orientation, just like another individual may be grappling with heterosexuality or even homosexuality, and if we agree on the fact that true pedophiles have an exclusive preference for children, which is the same as having a sexual orientation, everyone knows that there is no such thing as real therapy. You cannot change this person's sexual orientation." And if they're born this way, with apologies to Lady Gaga, who are we to judge? Now, I'm not saying that some of the things done to pedophiles is justified, for example, the harassment they receive. I'm a Christian, and we at least are to love the thief, the liar, the murderer, and the pedophile as God loves them. I completely denounce harassment, but words mean things. And this is a big step in the cultural normalization process. And at the moment, there is still some sanity on the subject. One group in Germany attempting to counsel pedophiles uses the following statement: "You are not guilty because of your sexual desire, but you are responsible for your sexual behavior. There is help." This is true of us all. We all have our weak points of temptation, but it's how we act that is the problem. However, consider how homosexuality was viewed just a generation ago, and how it's been so normalized that some states allow same-sex marriage. The biggest argument that the homosexual crowd put forth was that this was something in their genes. They were born this way, and therefore was nothing more than being left-handed or blue-eyed. We don't restrict marriage to right-handed people only. Well, if we continue to use that argument and consider pedophilia just another sexual orientation, then while the act may still be frowned upon for the moment, the foundation has already been laid to normalize it. Now, I dealt with the issue of slippery slope arguments last episode as well. But again, this is the same situation, a clearly knowable result of previous cultural changes. If someone had suggested in the 1970s that, given the cultural changes at the time, we would wind up someday calling pedophilia a sexual orientation, few would have considered it plausible. Now, I'm very supportive of efforts to counsel pedophiles before they act on their thoughts. However, the change in terminology can and does change the culture and the views. Whether or not Dr. van Heijsenhem means to do it, this change can easily be taken up by others to slip us further down this slope to a place that I'm not sure we want to be. Well, not the most cheery of episodes, but there you have it. I would really like to hear what you think about these topics, because I think a good give and take helps us to sharpen each other and take a general opinion on a topic and turn it into a well-thought-out, considered opinion. Email me at considerthis@ctpodcasting.com or load up the website at considerthis.ctpodcasting.com for Facebook, Google+, or Twitter. Let's get a dialogue going so that each of us can consider this.